gana timidandasya, gananjana shalakaya, chakshun militang yena, tasmai sri guruve namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We'd like to welcome you to the most thorough, comprehensive, and confidential knowledge acquiring situation on the planet. How could that be? You might think that this is a nice spiritual place. But while thinking that, and we hope you do think that, you may miss out on the extraordinary educational transformations that occur here. Normally, you think of education as going to a school, sitting in a classroom, or online, and having information presented to you. And you master the information, repeat it back. You apply that information and make things happen in the world. You can manipulate the world. You can earn money with the information you've received. You can achieve your material goals. But the kind of information that we have here is completely different. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the basic texts for spiritual education, define two types of knowledge. One is called in Sanskrit aparavidya, and the other is called paravidya. So aparavidya means inferior knowledge. That means knowledge about mundane things in this world. Knowledge dealing with matter and the arrangements of matter. Unfortunately, most people are bound up within the confines of aparavidya. So much so that the information that they master simply leads to more complicated ways of eating, sleeping, defending themselves, and reproductive activity. This preponderance of information of the inferior type actually distorts human existence. Please think about that. As long as we neglect the power of our spirit self, we'll never be properly situated in life. We'll always be like a person who's trying to relish the inside of a coconut by chewing on the outside of the coconut husk. You can just see yourself doing that. You go to the market, you get a coconut with the brown husk of the hull, and you chew on the outside, trying to relish. Simply, you become exhausted. Your jaw becomes sore. Material knowledge will do that to us. We think that we are advancing by complicating our abilities to manipulate matter. But actually, we're going backwards because in our complicated lifestyle, we increasingly overlook our spiritual nature. We are not aware of the power of the spirit self, known in Sanskrit as the Atma. So all the flood of information that we're drowning in this information age, is doing a disservice to us by obliterating the necessity we should feel for paravidya, superior knowledge, knowledge of the spiritual energy and the source of all energies. Because we're so caught up with material knowledge of the body, the mind, and how to manipulate matter in this world. We fool ourselves into thinking that we can solve our problems. The first point that Bhagavad Gita will teach you is that no solution is possible on the material platform. Now, just think about that. You may say, well, I've solved a few problems in life here and there. I've come across solutions. But how long and how deep does that solution last? In other words, we're fascinated by superficial adjustments in life. We're fascinated by superficial solutions, whether economic, political, personal. But we're missing the point in terms of what is the deep solution, the lasting solution. In Bhagavad Gita, the prime bhakti yoga text, Krishna is concerned with our inability to come up with practical solutions in spite of our pride. Yes, Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is concerned about that. Because of our pride, though, we shield ourselves from the reality of our inabilities. We look at our career training, we look at our educational background, and we want to feel confident. We look at our life experience, and we want to feel that I'm seasoned in terms of how to live in this world. I've got experience. I've got education. I've got career training. I'm okay. See, no one wants to feel that you're disadvantaged. You want to feel self-esteem. You want to feel that self-confidence. I've got the skills. I've got the information. I've got the knowledge. And so life can go on in a satisfactory way. But what Bhagavad Gita will help you to do is look at your fund of knowledge and see how deficient it is. Moreover, that fund of knowledge, because it's distorted, may be causing so many problems. In that way, you could say, the more you know of material knowledge, the more distorted your intelligence becomes. Because you miss the point, and your pride becomes monstrous. We're very prone to becoming proud in this day and age. Even though we lack knowledge of the self, we lack knowledge of the Supreme Self and the relationship between the two. So Bhagavad Gita is a humiliating book, but the humiliation is most enjoyable. To actually realize that I don't know what I should know, that's liberating. But as long as we have the pride that I'm educated, I've had career training, I have life experience. As long as we have that pride, we'll miss the value of what Krishna is speaking in Bhagavad Gita. The education that you get here is based on taking knowledge straight from Krishna. That knowledge is not just some kind of dry information that you attack with your intellectual faculties. We're very impressed by our intellectual machinery. We all feel some sense of awareness that I know. There's some things I know. There are other things I don't know, but believe me, there's some things I know. Remember the famous American comedian, Jimmy Durante. He would always quip, My mind's made up. Don't try to confuse me with the facts. When we have that kind of attitude, it's difficult to profit from the education that we have here. Nevertheless, even someone who thinks they know everything, if they have the good fortune to allow themselves exposure to the bhakti process, they can actually make spiritual advancement, because the knowledge being disseminated here is transformational. It's not about just loading up your head, so to speak, with all kinds of information. The information is weighing down on your brain, so to speak, and therefore you can feel very learned and knowledgeable. No, the education you get here is about transformation. The knowledge is transformational. It produces changes in your consciousness. So it's not about coming here and just blindly participating in rituals, although it is a fact that if you're in contact, if you're actually in contact with the spiritual reality, you'll be affected whether you know it or not. Just like a little child can approach a fire. If the child sticks his or her hand in the fire doesn't say, oh, you don't know about me, therefore I won't burn you. No. Whether you know about fire or not, you come near, you get burned. Similarly, it's true that whether you understand the full significance of what goes on here or not, there will be an effect. But we want to today focus on the maximum effect that is available to you by taking seriously the bhakti information. Your consciousness changes and you see differently. So it's not about just blindly repeating a catechism or blindly doing some rituals. It's all about the transformation of the material self, spiritualizing your existence so that you can actually see the world in a different way, see yourself in a different way, see others in a different way. This is why we say Krishna consciousness. How to be conscious of Krishna. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita and then its graduate study, Srimad Bhagavatam, is to increase your consciousness of Krishna. Because once you are aware of the source of all energies, then you can handle the energies that emanate from that source. This is the bhakti advantage. It's very nice to be aware of some energies. We may have chemical engineers here, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers. So they know how to manipulate various energies. But it's a much more advantageous position if you know the source of all the energies. And in Bhagavad Gita, the source of all energy speaks. Now you may say, well, how can that be? But you are just energy, yet you can speak. Why can't the source of all energy speak? If we take our information from the source of all energies, then we can properly understand how to manipulate those energies in a beneficial way. But what you see going on in human society today is what? Human beings don't know what to do with the world around them and don't know what to do with themselves. Human beings are the only species that destroys its own habitat. So what does that say about human intelligence? And the human beings can't control themselves, even though they may know that they can't go on living in the world in the same way as they've been doing, ecologically speaking. They may know that, but they still can't stop. They lack the proper knowledge. Proper knowledge produces a purification of consciousness. It's not just about memorizing facts or passing an exam. It's about coming in contact with the source of all knowledge, taking knowledge from that source, and because you're in contact with that source of all knowledge, you see changes happen in you. You see the ignorance in your life drain away, and the experience is like the sun rising right next to you. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna promises you that when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can cross over all of the miseries and illusions of life. So that's what real knowledge does. It takes you from an inferior position to a superior position. Now, an inferior position doesn't simply mean you're not making as much money as you like to, or you don't like the boss. Inferior position means you're thinking the body and mind are the self. You think that the material energy is yours to manipulate. This is an inferior position. I am this body and mind. My goal in life is how to satisfy my body and mind. And whatever bodies and minds are temporarily favorable to me, I'll help them out a bit too. That's an inferior position. Because such a position is firmly in the grip of the inferior energy. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains he has an inferior potency and a superior potency. Both are his energies. The inferior potency means the material energy. Not conscious. Inanimate. And the superior potency means the energy of spiritual consciousness. By our total immersion in the inferior energy, the prospects of our life become very bleak because all material arrangements are temporary. And by investing our hopes for fulfillment in the material energy, the inferior energy, we're creating a dead end for ourselves, which we don't mind, we say, as long as we get a few temporary pleasurable stimulations. We don't mind that we're so blind. The knowledge-giving process in Bhagavad Gita invites you to enter the bhakti laboratory. Krishna is not interested in you simply believing. Krishna wants you to enter the laboratory and experience when you apply the techniques of bhakti. So bhakti is a spiritual technology which operates outside the realm of apara vidya, inferior knowledge. When you read Bhagavad Gita, you become inspired that I'd like to experience this. And then when you go further to the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, then you see and learn, you experience things you could never conceive would happen to you in this lifetime. Because that knowledge you're in contact with transforms you, purifies you, expands your awareness. You don't see the world in the same way. So again, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can cross over the material ocean of illusion. What does it mean, transcendental knowledge? That means knowledge beyond things that have a beginning and end. Knowledge beyond matter. Krishna also can give you knowledge of matter because that's his energy. But he's pointing out to you that superior to the knowledge of matter is knowledge of the spirit self, the supreme self, and the relationship between the two. The actual competent person who can live in this world properly knows how to deal with the material energy and the spiritual energy. sometimes uninformed persons think that our Krishna-conscious people, the bhakti yoga practitioners, are naive. They couldn't make it in the material rat race, so they escape from it all and have a kind of a cloistered lifestyle in which they're always staring at the heavens and vibrating mantras and just disconnected from the world. By following Krishna's educational system, you become aware of how to handle all the energies, because all the energies belong to Krishna. And by following a program of simply material education, you become more and more illusioned, especially because our pride becomes swollen. I know how this thing works. I know how that thing works. You feel a false sense of expertise and competence. But when it comes to our own life, we have no idea who we are, why we're in this world, what is the purpose of life. Society gives us a false sense of honor and respect. Oh, you know. Actually, you don't know what you should know. Knowledge of how to make money is not real knowledge. Knowledge of how to get ahead in your career is not important knowledge. Yes, we all need to support ourselves without a doubt. But once we understand what is superior knowledge, then we can see the material knowledge in its proper perspective. It is not that the Krishna conscious person, the bhakti yoga practitioner, has no material knowledge. No. You can just look at the organization of this new Dwarka community. There's so many informations required. Technology, finance, administration. But all that kind of information is directly focused on using the energies for the pleasure of the source of the energies. Therefore, the knowledge, even about material things, takes on a completely different quality. Because everything belongs to Krishna. It's not that Krishna is simply in charge of the spiritual energy. The material energy also comes from him. So the Krishna practitioner, the Krishna conscious person, knows how to cooperate with Krishna in terms of dealing with Krishna's energies. That's the harmony that is missing in so many lives today. People are trained to simply live for yourself. It's all about you and how you feel. Even the material duties and responsibilities of the previous generation, that's all gone now. You talk to anyone who's under 25, and they'll show you the results of a materialistic society. It's all about me and what I want, how I feel today. That's all. The parents from an older generation, of course, may try to tell their child, look, what about duty? What about responsibility to your family, to society, to the nation? Who wants to hear all that? No. When you've watched enough television, seen enough movies, you know what your duty is. You know what your commitment is for. You know what responsibility is for. Simply for your own senses. How am I going to gratify myself? That is my allegiance. I pledge allegiance to my sense gratification. And if there's a God and he helps me out with my sense gratification, praise the Lord. And if he gets in the way, everything is based on me and how I feel at the moment. And then you have people lamenting that, what's the world come to? No one's responsible. No one has integrity anymore. Everyone is so selfish. Everyone's just trying to get for themselves. But what do you expect when people don't have the right kind of knowledge, the right kind of information? They haven't been educated properly. What do people expect is the goal of education? That you know how to make money. Even the old-fashioned idea, which is a material idea, about you should have a well-rounded education, you know, in the humanities, and then you'll be able to be a proper member of a democratic society because you're informed. Remember all that? It's all out the window now. Education is for equipping you to make money by hook or crook. That's all. Some countries I've traveled to in the world, the Department of Education will even explicitly say, right, as their mission statement, they'll say, the purpose of education is to enhance economic opportunity. Finished. And then you wonder, why is there a problem with democracy? Why is everyone so bewildered? Why? Where is the character? Where is the sense of responsibility? Well, look at the education that people are getting. One part of the world that I travel to, actually I travel everywhere except Antarctica, but a particular part of the world I go to yearly is having quite a bit of commotion these days, Ukraine. And I saw a very interesting survey done by a Princeton professor of sociology. He was surveying the American public about their feelings, what should be done or not done in terms of the conflict in Ukraine and all the turmoil, Russia staking its claims, the U.S. saying, Western Europe saying, hold back. So this Princeton professor found through his survey that very few Americans actually knew where Ukraine is. And the ones who didn't know where it was are the ones with the strongest opinions that the USA should intervene and do something. They don't even know where the place is. So you see, even from the material point of view, our education is failing us because it's not financially meaningful to people to know where Ukraine is. What to speak of why you're in this world. How many of you, when you applied for a job or applied for entry into college, saw a question, can you tell us who you are? You never saw that kind of question. Can you tell us what the purpose of life is? Or, can you control your mind and senses? You never saw questions like that. They're irrelevant. So then I think you can understand. Knowing this, I think you can understand why people will have some difficulty understanding the educational process here. Because this educational process here is about paravidya, superior knowledge of the spiritual energy and the source of both the spiritual and the material energy. And by learning that knowledge, hearing from Krishna, and learning that knowledge, your character becomes transformed. Indeed, the very core of your being becomes changed. Even more specifically, your eternal relationship with Krishna becomes renovated, revived. You're no longer functioning in this world as an amputated hand. What value does an amputated limb have? If you saw an amputated limb on the street, He would be disgusted. But that is what our material life is like. We're cut off from our connection to the ultimate source. We're cut off from our connection to Krishna. And therefore, the best kind of success we have is some momentary flickering, some momentary glamour. So yes, you can say, everyone's life has a purpose. You can even say that about moths. When the moths fly into the fire, that's a purpose. But shouldn't we be aspiring for something higher than what the moths do? So how can we change our situation so that we're not basing our whole life on momentary acquisition, momentary stimulation of the senses? How can we change our life? This is why Krishna says, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, knowledge above things that have a beginning and end, knowledge of the spiritual energy, then there won't be material illusion for you anymore. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also compares transcendental knowledge to be like a fire that can burn unlimited quantities of past karmic reactions. Krishna makes you aware that you're carrying baggage from countless lifetimes in innumerable type of bodies, innumerable locations, innumerable in that you can't count it. You're carrying those karmic reactions. And therefore, you don't have a clean slate when you're approaching your life in this lifetime. You're bringing in so many reactions. So many of these reactions are pressing down on you. You don't actually have a free go. You don't have a free chance in terms of being free from any past complications. So in that sense, there's no... And you find that out when you turn 12 or 13, don't you? Parents find that out about their innocent children when the children become 12 or 13 or 14. There's a change that happens. The seeds of desire from previous lifetimes sprout, and your whole outlook changes. So the so-called innocence of the child means just... it's just a matter of time before the desire seeds sprout. The desire seeds are there, but they haven't sprouted yet, but they will. So that temporary period in which the desire seeds haven't sprouted, that's called innocence. So how do we deal with our complete past? You may know persons who are very much affected by traumas that happened in childhood, maybe due to bad parents or some disaster they were caught in when they were a little child and they can't forget it. They may have seen some violent scene, or they went through some ordeal, or some loved one died right in front of them. So there's a trauma. So the usual so-called solution is that you need to go to a psychotherapist, and that psychotherapist will get you over that trauma, that shock. But the way life is in this world, it's one shock after another. You clear out one shock, another shock comes. Lifetime after lifetime. What Krishna proposes in Bhagavad Gita is to give you knowledge to end all the shocks, end all the traumas, by teaching you how not to think your material body and mind is the self, and by teaching you to be aware of your spiritual identity as part of Krishna. And that information is expanded upon in Srimad Bhagavatam. I first came to a Krishna temple due to my pursuit of Srimad Bhagavatam. I was of the opinion, this was more than 40 years ago, that the Krishna conscious literature was the most extraordinary knowledge and information I had ever come in contact with. But I thought the practitioners, the devotees, were pie in the sky and dreamy, and they had nothing to offer for the practical solutions of the world's problems. So I decided, since these Krishna people are so dreamy, I'll just order all the books from their mail order outlet for their literature, and I'll read all the books in my home, and that way I'll have the best of everything. I'll have my pseudo-sophisticated Manhattan life, and I'll have the world's best literature. I can't beat that. But one day, I got a message in the mail from the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in Los Angeles, informing me that the deluxe edition of the Graduate Study to Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, was just about to be published. They described it as the encyclopedia of the spiritual world. I said, wow, that's the kind of education I need. So that, to make a long story short, in pursuit of that encyclopedia of the spiritual world, I came for the first time to a gathering like this. Otherwise, I was reading Srila Prabhupada's books without ever talking to devotees. I was reading them 4 hours a day for 6 months straight. But I never wanted to come to an association like this or a gathering like this, because I thought, the books are the greatest knowledge I've ever seen, but these devotees, what do they know about solving the world's problems? As if I were doing something to solve the world's problems. But once I came to the association of Krishna's devotees, I could see that they had gotten to the root of the world's problems and could actually offer a practical solution. You may say, but the solution you have here, how many people are going to take it? But you see, whether millions and billions take it or not, you owe it to yourself to see, is this the actual solution to the world's problems? A genuine person wants to be real, to be authentic. And this bhakti knowledge allows you the maximum authenticity for your existence. How to recognize that your spirit soul part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. How to recognize all the energies as belonging to Krishna, and how to use those energies for Krishna's pleasure. This is the topmost engineering. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivam sho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. You living entities are eternally my parts. But what's happened? You're struggling with your material senses and mind in the oppressive material atmosphere. That shouldn't happen. But you've chosen to turn your back on your spiritual identity and your relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth. You've chosen to turn your back on Krishna, and therefore you're undergoing so many complications, illusory pleasures, disappointments, false elations. This is the story of our material life. Real education, real knowledge, real information transforms the illusioned living entity, revives your dormant relationship with the supreme cause of all causes. And then you can actually be a success in life. Because real success in life transcends birth, death, old age, and disease. Artificial success is always ruined by those things. But what Krishna is offering in Bhagavad Gita will profit you beyond any change in the body. This is the kind of information that people need. Otherwise, they're always going to become embittered by material disappointment. Even if they're on a very high perch, they become the most bitter because the distance from the high perch when they crash to the ground is a big distance. Let us think about how we can change the kind of information that predominates in our life. Remember, aparavidya, paravidya, inferior knowledge and superior knowledge. The information, the knowledge that is being distributed here is the topmost because it gets to the root of all complications, the root of all problems. The bhakti knowledge identifies the problem and then gives you the positive solution. In this way, your life can genuinely be a success. And certainly that's what you all want. You don't want to be known as a failure. It's quite embarrassing. But how do you define success? Is it through financial wealth, social prestige, or that you've had a few good feelings last month, therefore you're successful? No, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita will elevate your conceptions of success to a completely another level. And then you can actually be fulfilled. Otherwise, from the material energy of illusion, there is never satisfactory fulfillment. Real information, real knowledge turns your attention away from the shadow energy, the energy of illusion, to the light, the spiritual reality. Because you are spirit soul, part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. How to experience that? Knowledge of how to experience that is the greatest technology, the greatest art, the greatest science, the greatest culture. I thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Might there be any questions? Yes.
I guess, learn it in Bhagavad Gita, but in a very scholarly way. And then I had a devotee who was very learned in the Vedas, but he was very intense about doing things properly. And I was listening to what you were saying about learning so much, but like missing the point. And I feel that they both, although on two different ends of the spectrum, were missing the point of the words in the Bhagavad Gita or in Krishna consciousness.
I can't comment on that, not because I don't know, you know, what you're referring to. But I can explain that you read Bhagavad Gita as it is, everything is completely straightforward. Mm-hmm. It's not like when I made an attempt at Yale University to study Bhagavad Gita in my last year there. And the version of Bhagavad Gita that they had us read stated that Krishna is a concept meant to satisfy both the intellectuals and the sentimentalists. When I read that, I just, something told me, forget this book. I slammed the book shut and I threw it against the wall. I said, how? Because I was thinking, I don't know anything about Krishna, but how can this person say that? Does this person know Krishna? He doesn't present himself as knowing Krishna, but he just makes that judgment. Krishna is a concept meant to satisfy intellectuals and sentimentalists. So I'm supposed to waste my time studying the words of someone who has no idea who is Krishna and doesn't even present himself as knowing Krishna. Just making a pronouncement like that simply because he has a PhD. So I became determined right there and then. I said, one day I'm going to find out someone who really knows Krishna and who really knows Bhagavad Gita. So I thank you all for your kind attention. The past few weeks we've been speaking here. Tonight I get on the plane and I head down under to New Zealand and Australia. I look forward to seeing you all again in a few months. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.